Good morning, Arizona. Come on around back with me out into the garden and see what we can learn from Mr. John J. Harper of Harper's Nursery, who's out here. Looks like he's polishing a few baby tomato bulbs, just waiting for them to get the right size. If you have a landscape or garden question, get on the line now at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. How long to harvest, sir?
Oh, gosh, still got a while to harvest. Hopefully people are getting their tomato plants in the ground. We're kind of right in the middle of it. I usually try and have them in by now and have had mine planted for a while. But it's not too late, and, we keep getting new varieties in every week, and people keep going. But I usually try and hope to have my first tomatoes sometime in April, certainly by the 1st of May. And, because you got May and June to harvest, and then they kind of start crapping out on you when the monsoon hits and it gets hot at night. So that's why you want to get them in early here. We're also starting to plant, the other kind of warm season crops, squashes and cucumbers and eggplant, and those sorts of things now too. Peppers, sorry, don't want to forget peppers. So we're right in the throes. I mean, it's the first Saturday of March. We finally have a weekend without rain and one day of the forecast, and not a breath of wind out there and bright blue skies. So, man, if you don't have something you can find to do in your garden, I guarantee you got a weed or two growing somewhere. Even if you use some pre-emergent, you probably got some weeds in places you missed and that sort of thing. You've got things that need pruned back. We want to do that heavy spring rejuvenation pruning now that the danger of frost is long past. And things like lantanas and bougainvilleas and some of our big tachomas and those. I've noticed some people really doing it the right way this spring. They're cutting it really hard and way back and getting that good heavy pruning so that they'll have this nice rejuvenation of growth this spring, and they won't have to be shearing and pruning their plants all the time because they're outgrowing the space. And then you end up, we have an email person right now that's emailed in that I have to answer yet about why their hibiscus isn't blooming. And one of the comments is I prune them 4 or 5 times a year. Well, there you go. You're pruning off the blooming ends of those hibiscus continually. So it's never going to bloom. So prune it heavy about now and then let it go. So
don't kill it with kindness. Don't over prune.
If you want it to look natural and have lots of color, you need to stop pruning at some point. So so this is a great time to do that rejuvenation pruning. With all the rain and moisture we've had, and Rosie, in our neighborhood in the last week, over 3 inches of rain. So that's just in the last week. That's just as of Monday, the subsequent storm to that and that. So 3 inches in those two events. Even if you applied pre-emergent, in January, I'd probably be ready to do it again, in April or May to prevent those summer, especially the spurge crop that we've been having so badly. Great time to be fertilizing citrus. Heck, there's just about not, it'd be quicker to tell you what you can't do right now than what you can't. Plant citrus, plant fruit trees, all that stuff. So it's garden time.
And it's not too late to fertilize if you missed your February 14th.
No, not at all. Not at all. You want to make sure you get, this is a really critical time to feed because all of those, especially citrus, are trying to push new growth, bloom, set fruit. They're using up lots of stored up energy. So getting some nitrogen in the soil around those citrus trees, the shade trees, even your winter lawn, you want to make sure you're kicking it at least one more time. Absolutely.
Well, it's going to, like you said, there's the list of what you can't do is a lot shorter. So we've got the calls and the texts lining up. Let's get to some of those now. First, quickly, a text from a 520 area code wanting to know where to get Guadalupe palms.
I would probably try Mesquite Valley Growers in Tucson. Should be a good spot for those. I would think they'd have them.
Okay. There you go. And anything special about a Guadalupe palm?
It's a nice, slow-growing palm. Doesn't get super huge. Still gives you that fan leaf, fan-shaped palm. You don't see a ton of them around. I think one of the reasons is that they are slow, which can be a blessing and a curse. But It's a nice palm.
Well, there you go. We appreciate the question. You can text questions to 411-923 or call in, like Roger, at 1-888-767-4348. Roger, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I was wondering what your thoughts were on the tomato plants when you buy them, I don't know, a foot and a half tall. I've seen a lot on the internet about burying everything but the very top of it, but laying them horizontal, and they say they get a lot more production out of them that way. How do you feel about that, and is there any tips on doing that?
That's a good point. If you can find tomato plants that are pretty tall and lanky, don't be hesitant to buy those, because as Roger said, you can either dig a deep hole and plant them, or some people will dig like a trench, lay them in the trench, and then bend the last 3 or 4 inches up out of the ground. If you look at a tomato plant, it's got a little hairs on the stem, and it's one of the few plants that we do encourage planting deeper than it comes in the pot. Most of those little hairs will turn into roots, so you end up with a supersized root system for this plant. And once that thing kicks in, you'll have, you know, a really strong, vigorous plant due to all of those roots. So yeah, I sometimes the old time guys will come in and they'll find these big, tall, kind of scraggly looking six packs of tomatoes. They don't care because they're just gonna plant all that thing down in the ground. Strip the leaves off. I wouldn't bury any leaves. So kind of pinch all the leaves off that are, you know, on the stem if those are going to be buried. And then just either turn the last few inches up out of the ground, or you can dig it. There's nothing wrong with just digging a deeper hole and planting them deeper. Either way.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, we appreciate the call, Roger. Good luck with your tomatoes. And it's, like you said, it's something that you would keep until about the time that 100 degrees hits.
Well, when our nights start getting warm, usually about when the monsoon kicks in and those nights quit cooling off, the tomato pollen is no longer viable. Those plants, you know, even if you have plants that are alive and blooming, they're not going to set any fruit. Then to me, it becomes a question of water and space. Is it worth trying to carry that plant through the summer, spending water, spending, you know, when that space could perhaps be devoted for something that is going to produce for you, or left fallow and turned and enriched? Tomato plants are very inexpensive. They grow really fast, and they set fruit really fast. I'm not a big believer in trying to get tomato plants, which are really an annual, they're not a perennial, to go from season to season. You know, when for a couple, $3-4, even if you want to buy a great big supersized one for 10 or 15 bucks, you can buy a new one, have it blooming and setting fruit in 30 or 60 days. As to spending a lot of time, energy, water, shade, fertilizer to get it to go through the summer when, you know, and it still might not be as viable a producer as a brand new vigorous one that's coming on strong in new growth. So I take them out. I tear them out. Besides, I just don't like the looks of a bunch of shade cloth draped over my garden and all over the place and, you know, half crappy looking tomatoes out there. I just jerk them out and I'll plant a cover crop of sweet potatoes or something like that and have that be a productive and more attractive look in my garden.
Now, we will get to weed control. You mentioned pre-emergent a little bit. We'll talk through some killers and different types of weeds that we're going to be combating, but beforehand, let's talk a little bit about pest control. And we have one in particular texter want to know, are ladybugs a good organic pest control?
Well, ladybugs certainly can work. The problem with ladybugs is you have very little control whether they stay where you want them to or not, as they are mobile. So they're fun. If you've got kids, I'd encourage you to do it. If nothing else, just to let kids see what they do. Turn them loose in the garden and see what happens. Sometimes they work great, but there's no telling. Praying mantids probably is a better choice, where you can put the casings out in the garden and let them hatch out. They tend to stay put. They're also, quite frankly, a more aggressive predator to some of the other insects. And you know, insect control and weed control kind of go hand in hand as well, because letting weeds grow up in your garden does give insects a place to reproduce. So they're kind of a competitor, so to speak, to your garden.
Romy, you mentioned last week using tulle instead of bird netting on your garden. I wonder if that would help keep them in a little more because the holes are so much smaller. They might
if you wanted to trap the ladybugs in your garden using tulle. I don't know if everybody quite knows what tulle is, but Jennifer could probably explain it better than I can. Go ahead.
Well, it's just like a real fine netting, like you might find it in a petticoat, or they use it a lot in weddings to decorate. It's kind of just a real fine,
like wedding veil material.
Mm-hmm,
almost.
Open, yeah. But very small holes. Yeah. So anyway.
It makes a great bird netting. It makes a great, actually, row cover. If you're planting new crops, you can throw it over the top. That's light enough, they'll push it up as they grow. So, it might work. That might keep them in.
That has certainly been our trouble every time I've tried is
yeah.
They're gone in a day or two.
The theory is if there's enough there for them to eat, they'll stay, but that doesn't really hold true either. A little tip, release them at night and don't go out there and just scatter the container. Actually open the container and let them kind of come out on their own. Make sure there's moisture there. Kind of mist the garden down, wet the garden down before you do it. Those are all little things you can do to try and promote that they stay put, at least for a little while.
Ladybugs. Now, aside from insects, what products can we use to help combat the insect invasion?
Well, again, keeping your garden weed-free is a great tool. I mean, especially as we get warmer and warmer, aphids, white flies, a lot of insects that are harmful to your garden will harbor and reproduce and live in those weeds. So keeping the garden weed-free. Inspect your garden. Don't just go out and just start spraying for spraying's sake. And then evaluate the damage being done. Sometimes you can have some insects there that aren't beneficial insects, but they're not really doing enough damage to warrant, measures of control. So make sure they're doing that. And then there's tons of biological and safe and organic pesticides on the market anymore. Just tons of them. Captain Jack's and Triple Action and Neem Oil. And, the list goes on and on. So don't be hesitant to use those if you're a little bit leery of using, traditional pesticides. There are a lot of great, safe, organic options for you.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation.